Neuroscientist at UT Southwestern netted the Nobel Prize for Medicine this week. But first, to the Frontline documentary that drew attention to football and concussions, a Cowboys legend speaks up. Troy Aikman worries the bad publicity and the NFL's new limits on helmet-to-helmet hits and contact in practice could change the game. Former quarterback told Fox 4 multiple concussions that left him on the bench and in the hospital weren't the real reason he retired 12 years ago. It was a degenerative back condition. Here's a bit of what he said when he retired in 2001.
I've been playing this game since I was 7 years old, and to all of a sudden recognize that you're not going to be doing it anymore is hard. And I know it's the right thing. I know it's the right thing for me because of my health, concussions, my back problems that I've had.
Aikman's now an NFL commentator for Fox. His story was featured in the Frontline film League of Denial. You can watch it at kera.org. From brain injuries to how brains work, the Nobel Prize for Medicine announced this week went to a neuroscientist who spent 25 years at UT Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. Dr. Thomas Sudoff took a break from what's been a whirlwind week for our Friday conversation with KERA's Vice President of News, Rick Holter.
Dr. Sudoff, welcome to the Friday conversation.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'll start with the big question. Can you describe the moment you got the call?
That was one of the most unusual moments in my life because I was traveling, driving a rental car after a sleepless night on a plane in the middle of Spain and trying to find a place, getting slightly cranky because it took much longer than I thought it would. When I got a phone call, I thought it was somebody else, so my mood obviously improved.
So how did you react? What did you say?
Well, first I thought it wasn't true, but I guess I became convinced very quickly it must be true. And I was surprised beyond imagination because I didn't expect it.
So let's talk about your work a little bit. You focused on how nerve cells communicate with each other in the brain. How does your research affect our understanding of, say, Alzheimer's disease?
We know a lot about Alzheimer's disease. We know genes that are responsible. We know some of the noxious agents. But we actually don't know why Alzheimer's disease occurs, why the neurons die, why the synapses become impaired. What my work has done is shed light on how synapses work. And by doing that, it has allowed progress in probing why the synapses don't work as well in Alzheimer's disease, and thus enabled a better understanding of the disease.
So you're at Stanford now, but you spent, 25 years here in Dallas?
I did, yeah.
And UT Southwestern is where you kind of built your career, and they're proud to claim you as the seventh Nobel winner to come out of the school. What is it about that school that draws so much Nobel attention?
I think Southwestern is just a wonderful place because it really fosters communication, interactions, collaborations. It is driven by the spirit of excellence, and it is not as politically involved in sort of internal politics and things like this.
I'm wondering, when you think back to your time in Dallas, is there a certain place, a certain moment you picture in your mind?
There are many images that immediately come up. One is sort of the summer heat-filled empty streets, which honestly has its own charm.
So you have that medal up on the mantle, pretty much the pinnacle of scientific honors. Where does a scientist go from here?
We don't do science for medals. I don't think anything will change for me in terms of what I want to do. It's been exhilarating and just absolutely wonderful to be the recipient of this award, for sure. But it doesn't change what I do, nor is it the reason why I became a scientist. I mean, my major goal is, and my major driving force in what I do, is to try to learn more about how the brain works and try to contribute to find ways of treating people where the brain doesn't work. That won't change. That is what I want to do.
Well, Dr. Thomas Sudoff, congratulations and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very, very much.
That's Dr. Thomas Sudoff in our Friday conversation with KERA's Rick Holter. Cars race, horses race, pigs race, and this year at the State Fair, ostriches race. KERA's BJ Austin headed down to the paddock.
The competitors stand 7 feet tall, their heads well above the top frame of the starting gate. They look like miniature bobbleheads with big brown eyes, heads darting up and down side to side as the jockeys mount. That's right, there are riders. In a flash, they're rounding the curve of the horseshoe track at the Pan American Arena. Then across the finish line, it's Big Bird by a neck.
You know, we really don't time them, but I'm going to say from start to finish, 10 to 15 seconds. I mean, it's fast.
Joe Hedrick is master of ceremonies. This is the first time he's brought ostrich races to the state fair. 24 are here, and Hedrick knows each one by name.
We have Big Bird, Super Bird, In-House Harry, Birdzella, Bird Brain, Tweety Bird.
Tweety Bird sauntered over to join the post-race interview, and he was right on cue as Hedrick talked about the birds being famous for pecking at things and people, including Hedrick's knuckle.
And they come up here and peck, and they peck out of curiosity. Their beaks are, they have some strength in them, but like where he's pecking on my knuckle, it doesn't bother as much.
So what's it like to ride an ostrich? Jockey Carla Burrell's been doing it for 13 years.
There's nothing else like it on the planet, I can say that. Like a football, staying on the center, highest point of it is key.
Each racing ostrich wears a canvas harness on its back to protect its feathers and give jockeys something to hold on to. Burrell says sometimes jocks tuck their feet under the bird's wings. And she talks to her ostrich as they streak down the course.
Cluck, cluck noises. I go, yeah. Just something to where they're hearing you.
She says it helps them focus, but not always. Ostriches can be very unpredictable.
The most comical thing they do is they'll spin. They'll be in a dead run and all of a sudden decide they're going to stop and they're going to twirl like a ballerina really fast, and there's nothing much you can do. And it looks really cool to the audience.
But when that happens, Burrell says you get dizzy and then you get slung off. She has a few favorites she likes to ride.
They do seem to enjoy it. I think they're, you know, once you work with them for so long, which Joe does, you know, they get the routine down. They know what's going to happen when those gates open.
When it's showtime, handlers gently herd them down the hall to the arena. The birds walk with purpose and take a left into the ring. Fair officials say one animal rights group has registered a complaint about the attraction. Joe Hedrick says he understands it's not for everyone, but he says he takes care of his racing thoroughbirds.
And seeing these ostriches are so strong in their legs, them weighing 450 pounds, we limit the weight on the jockeys to 130 pounds. That's a reasonably light load on them. You know, we've been doing it for years. They do it in Africa. I know how strong they are. We feel, you know, that we know what we're doing.
The ostriches run three at a time and alternate races. It was all a first for David Arnold of Dallas.
Oh, I thought it was great. They're very funny. Magnificent, really. I'd love to see them really at full speed.
Which is about 30 miles an hour and would take a lot more room than they have at the fair. BJ Austin, KERA News.
The State Fair is gearing up for Texas OU weekend. The game starts at 11 a.m. tomorrow. Find more information at keranews.org. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Sam Baker. You can like KERA News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.